mean? I asked.
Ellie.
She smiled, revealing a big gap where her front teeth used to be.
They both came out at once, she told me. I tripped over our stupid cat and landed on my face and swallowed them. Not the cat. I didn't swallow her, just my teeth. But the tooth fairy came anyway, which was pretty nice of her, don't you think?
Now, Ellie, Mrs. Sullivan said, don't talk Jules's ear off.
Could that really happen? Could I talk someone's ear off? Wow, that would be amazing.
Maisie gave her sister a not-too-gentle push.
Get lost, Ellie. We're leaving now.
Ellie laughed.
Don't let the ghosts get you.
We'll send them to get you, Maisie said.
I'm not scared of ghosts. If I see one, I'll hit him on the nose and tell him to scram.
After a round of hugs and a flurry of goodbyes, we got into the truck and left for Oak Hill. As soon as Mom parked outside the addition, Maisie jumped out and looked at the old house. She must have taken in every detail. The scaffolding the workmen had erected, the sagging roof, the shutterless windows, the weeds growing wild. Turning to me, she said,
This is so cool. It's like something from a horror movie. I love it.
We followed Mom into the addition, and I led Maisie to my room. She plopped her pillow down on one twin bed and dropped her suitcase on the floor.
Which window is Lily's?
I pointed. The little one on the top floor. Maisie stared so hard, I expected the glass to break.
Can you see her? Is she there?
I joined her at the window. We pressed our faces against the glass and willed Lily to appear. We even tried chanting her name softly. Maisie sighed.
I've heard that ghosts only appear to people who don't want to see them.
That could be true. When we first moved here, I was terrified of ghosts, and then Lily came.
And you didn't even know she was a ghost at first.
And when I figured it out, I wasn't scared of her. Maisie smiled.
Just think, we'll see her together tonight.
We high-fived each other just as Mom called us for lunch, saying, Dad's made his special grilled cheese sandwiches in Maisie's honor. After one bite, Maisie told him they were just as good as the tuna melts at Mandy's Cafe.
Maybe even better.
That's a huge compliment, Mom told him. Well, the next time I'm in town, I'll be sure to try one, Dad said. After we'd eaten, Dad asked if we were ready for our tour. Maisie jumped up so fast, she knocked over her glass of cola. Mom told her not to worry. Go on, she said. I'll clean up. Dad unlocked the door and ushered us into the old house. The crew was sitting on the parlor floor eating lunch. Except for their voices, the building was quiet. As Dad took us from room to room, Maisie stared at the unfinished walls and the roughed-in stairs. She practically sniffed the air for traces of ghosts. The only things I smelled were sawdust and fresh-cut wood. Dad stopped at the bottom of the stairs.
We have more work to do on the second story, but come on up and take a look. The holes in the floor have been patched, so there's no danger of falling through.
Upstairs, I walked carefully around several stepladders, but Maisie walked under them, as if daring bad luck to find her. We both took care not to trip over tools scattered on the floor and tangles of extension cords snaking everywhere. In the corners, piles of trash waited to be swept up. The crew had left water bottles and soda cans all over the place. Dad took us through six large bedrooms. Each one had its own fireplace and several big windows with views of fields and mountains. Even with the walls stripped of plaster, it was easy to imagine how nice the rooms would be when Dad's work was done. Maisie pointed at a dimly lit, narrow stairway.
What's up there? She asked.
The hall at the top was dark. I pictured Lily hiding somewhere, her ear pressed to a door, listening to us. Was she afraid of us? Or eager to see us? Dad shrugged.
Nothing that I know of. We've been hard at work on the first and second floors. A few of the workmen have gone up to take a look. They didn't find anything interesting, just more dirt and rotten floors and spiderwebs.
Can we see it?
Maisie's foot was already on the first step. Dad shook his head.
It's not safe, girls. We haven't stabilized the stairs, and the floor is weak. Maisie and I looked at each other. Tonight, we'd see the third floor for ourselves. Once we were back in my room, I showed Maisie the key I'd found in the midden. She examined it with attention to every detail.
"It's magic," she whispered. "I can feel it, like something from a fairy tale."
"Not Bluebeard, I hope." Maisie shuddered, and so did I. Neither of us wanted a room full of Bluebeard's dead wives.
"Tonight, we'll see if it fits Lily's door," I said.
Maisie looked around my room.
"Where are those little dolls you told me about? I'd love to see them."
"I left them in the midden," I confessed.
"They scared me." "How can dolls be scary?"
I put the key back in my box.
"Wait till you see the bald one," I said.
18. The girl. The girl hears Jules's voice. She goes to her window and sees her walking on the grass below. Another girl is with her, or at least she thinks it's a girl. Her hair is cut shorter than a boy's. Like Jules, she wears boys' short pants and a baggy shirt. A pair of spectacles bigger than grandfather's perches on her freckled nose. They stop at the midden. Once more, the girl wonders why Jules is so interested in trash and broken things. Jules's friend picks up a stick and pokes at the ground. The first thing she finds is the ugly bald doll.
"Look at this."
Jules makes a face.
"Put her down, Maisie," she says. "That doll scares me."
So the friend is named Maisie. That means she's a girl. Unless boys have girls' names and girls have boys' names. Jules, for instance.
"Not me."
Maisie examines the doll.
"She must have come from the house. We should keep her."
"You keep her," Jules says.
"I don't want her."
The girl watches Maisie lay the doll gently down in the weeds. Why does she want it? It's ugly and ruined. Its eyes are gone, its hair is gone, its body is stained, and its legs and arms are falling off. Jules is right. The doll is scary. The girl can't bear to look at it. She is sure she doesn't want that doll. It's dead. Jules sits in the weeds and watches Maisie dig in the dirt. She doesn't help her.
"Oh, look!"
Maisie scoops up the little china dolls. The girl's fingers itch to hold them. She has an idea that they're all named Charlotte, but she doesn't know why they share the same name. Such odd notions she has. She considers making the dolls talk again, but she doesn't want to scare Jules, so she keeps quiet and watches Jules and Maisie divide the little figures between them. The girl wishes they'd share them with her. One for her, that's all. Just one.
Maisie says, "It's hot. Did you say there's a creek where we can cool off?"
The girl watches them disappear into the woods. If only she could go with them. There's something at the end of that path she longs to see. The trouble is, she cannot leave the locked room. She promised not to. Who made her promise? And why can't she remember? She looks at the little dolls on the grass, their faces turned up to the sky, their bodies stiff and hard. The bald doll sprawls beside them. A few tufts of hair still cling to her head, and her empty eye sockets are dark holes in her cracked face. The girl turns away from the window. If she could, she'd run outside and gather all the little dolls and bring them back to her room. She'd play with them. She'd make them talk. The dead doll can stay where it is. If the girl had a shovel, she'd bury it so deep, no one would ever dig it up again. 19. Jules. Sometime around midnight, when I was sure Mom and Dad were asleep, I led Maisie to the door that opened into the old house. We paused on the threshold and switched on our flashlights. For a moment, we stood still and listened. The house was dark and silent. Nothing moved. Dim light fell through the windows in the parlor. Maisie took my hand and we stepped into the shadows.
In the darkness, the past reclaimed the house. No matter what Mom believed, I knew people had been murdered in these rooms. Blood had stained its floor. Silent screams hung in its air. Staying close to Maisie, I forced myself to take one small step and then another. Each step led me farther from the addition and deeper into the old house. No matter how light we were on our feet, the floor creaked under us.
"Are you scared?" Maisie asked.
I shook my head. Actually, I wasn't as scared as I thought I'd be. Maisie made me braver. She wasn't afraid, so I wouldn't be afraid either. Maisie swept the darkness with her flashlight. Its beam of light made the shadows jump and move. Drafts of night air crept across the floor and chilled my ankles. A shadowy shape scurried across the floor and disappeared into a hole. A mouse? A rat? I shivered and edged closer to Maisie. Upstairs, Lily was waiting. Perhaps she heard us tiptoeing through the house and knew we were coming to rescue her. For good luck, I touched the key in my pocket. We climbed the stairs to the second floor, stopping every time a step creaked under our feet. No one heard us. No one called out from the shadows. I tried to breathe slowly and evenly, but I couldn't control the loud thumping of my heart. "I'm not afraid," I told myself. "I'm brave like Maisie. Lily is waiting. She needs us." At the bottom of the stairs to the third floor, Maisie touched my arm. Her fingers were so cold, I jumped.
"Your hand's like ice," I said. "It's freezing in here."
She put her foot on the first step. The stairs tilted to one side, and the hand railing was loose. So we climbed even more slowly than before. The steps groaned and wobbled, but we kept going. At the top, I leaned against a wall to catch my breath. Beside me, Maisie breathed hard.
"I don't like this place,"
she whispered.
"I don't either."
I looked behind me into the darkness below. Cold sweat ran down my spine. My legs felt so weak I was afraid I'd lose my balance and fall down the stairs. Maisie turned as if to go back down.
"This was a bad idea."
I grabbed her arm to stop her.
"We can't leave now. Lily needs us."
Maisie pulled away from me.
"You can stay if you like, but I'm getting out of here."
I stared at her in disbelief.
"Come on, Jules, let's go."
"This was your idea, Maisie. You said nothing scared you."
"Well, I was wrong."
Maisie looked as if she were about to cry.
"I'm sorry, Jules, but I can't do this."
Just as I was about to follow her back to the addition, the sound I'd been dreading stopped me.
"It's the horses," I whispered. "I hear them. They're coming. What should we do?"
Maisie grabbed my hand and held it tightly.
"If we lock ourselves in Lily's room, the men can't get us." "Are you sure?"
"It's always the same. The men go into the house, they come back out, and then they ride away. If they could get into her room, they'd take Lily and they wouldn't come back." Somewhere in the night, very close by, a horse whinnied and a man yelled.
"There's not much time, Maisie. Come on."
We ran to the closed door at the end of the hall. My fingers shook so badly I dropped the key. Maisie picked it up and handed it to me. She aimed the flashlight at the door while I poked the key at the keyhole. No matter which way I turned it, I couldn't fit it into the lock. My heart banged like a demented thing, and my breath came in gulps. It didn't help that Maisie's hands shook so hard she couldn't hold the flashlight steady.
"Hurry up," Maisie begged. "They're coming. Give me the key. Get out of the way. Let me try."
As Maisie tried to push me aside, the key turned with a loud, grating sound. I grabbed the knob, but my hands were so sweaty and shaky, I couldn't get a good grip on it.
"Hurry up, open the door," Maisie cried. "They're in the yard."
"Help me, it's stuck." Together, we pushed against the door. It opened so quickly, we tumbled into the room and sprawled on the floor. As soon as I'd locked the door behind us, the men came running up the stairs.
"Let us in," they shouted. "We know you're in there."
Shaking with fear, Maisie and I cowered together,
our arms around each other. The men had scared me when they were outside and I was safe in my bed, but to be this close to them reduced me to absolute terror. The wood groaned under their blows. The door shook in its frame. They'd break it down at any moment and find us. From outside, a woman cried, "Leave the girl be! Come away! Come away! You've got what you came for!" The men kicked the door. They cursed and swore. But the woman called again and again. "Fool of a woman," one muttered. "Just wait till I get my hands on her. She'll shut her mouth or I'll shut it for her."
"We'll be back," the other yelled at the door. "You ain't seen the last of us."
With that, they ran downstairs and out the back door. A few moments later, they mounted their horses and rode away. Gradually, their shouts faded into the dark, and the night was silent. Maisie and I huddled together and gasped for breath. We were both crying. Maisie clutched at me with shaking hands.
"Are they gone?"
"Yes."
"Are you sure?"
"I told you, Maisie, they won't come back until tomorrow night." Maisie wiped her nose with the back of her hand.
"I'm scared to stay here. Let's go back to your room."
"We don't need to be scared now. Nothing's here but Lily. Just Lily." Maisie took several deep breaths and peered into the darkness. The only light came from the moon. The rest of the room was hidden in shadows. She didn't say anything, but at least she'd stayed with me. I groped in the dark and found the flashlight she dropped. Its beam lit an easel in the center of the room. Beside the easel was a table covered with art supplies, a palette encrusted with dried paint, jars of brushes and pencils, bottles of turpentine, varnish and ink, tubes of oil paint, sticks of charcoal, and stacks of drawing paper. If it hadn't been for the thick gray fur of dust coating everything, I would have expected Mr. Bennett to return at any moment and finish the painting on the easel.
"Jules!" Maisie gasped and grabbed my arm. "There's someone over there, looking right at us!"
I swung the flashlight and saw a man's face peering at us from the shadows. I staggered back in fright and bumped into something that fell over with a clatter. A lot of other things followed it, hitting the floor like a row of dominoes.
"It's a painting," Maisie cried in relief. "They're all paintings."
Laughing like loud, silly kids, we saw dozens of paintings leaning against the walls. Several more lay on the floor where they'd fallen after I'd knocked over the first one. It was like being in an art gallery. Landscapes, animals, portraits. Dad was going to be so excited to know they were here, hidden in this house for over 100 years, but still as beautiful as the day Henry Bennett painted them.
"My mother does watercolors of flowers," Maisie said. "But this is real art."
We stopped in front of a large painting of a girl sitting on a tree limb, her bare feet dangling over a stream. The sun backlit her hair and illuminated each strand so it haloed her face. Her father had caught the light in her eyes and dotted her nose with freckles. She was so alive, I almost expected her to speak to us.
"This must be Lily," Maisie whispered.
"Yes," I said, and I leaned closer. "Lily Bennett is sitting exactly where I've sat. Isn't that amazing?"
"Look at the doll she's holding, Jules. It must be the one we found in the midden. I told you it belonged to Lily."
"It looked a lot better when it was new," I said.
"Are these her parents?"
Maisie pointed at the portraits on either side of Lily. On the right was a woman, her face slightly turned toward a window. She wore a long lavender dress, and her dark hair was swept back into a loose twist. On the left side was a man sitting behind an easel, peering around the back of a canvas, as if he were looking into a mirror and painting his reflection. He held a brush in one hand. His palette lay on the table beside him. "It's Henry and Laura Bennett," I said, "without a doubt." Behind us, I heard a faint rustling, as if we'd frightened a mouse. I looked at the wardrobe in the corner. The sound had come from there, I was sure of it. I glanced at Maisie to see if she'd heard anything, but she was still looking at the painting of Lily sitting on the tree limb.
Oh, Lily, she whispered. Please don't hide. Come out and talk to us.
20. Lily. The men are gone, but Jules and Maisie are in the studio. The girl wanted them to come, and here they are. But she's afraid to let them see her. Her nightgown is tattered and yellow with age. Her hair is long and tangled. She has no shoes. The girl peeks through a crack in the wardrobe's door. Jules and Maisie have stopped in front of a picture of the yellow-haired girl, the very picture she herself looked at just the other day. If only she knew who that yellow-haired girl is. Her name is on the tip of the girl's tongue. That's something people say when they forget things. She remembers an old woman saying, "Oh, it's on the tip of my tongue. Drat, why am I so forgetful?" Who was that old woman? The girl returns her attention to the two friends. Maisie says something to Jules in a low voice. In a louder voice, Jules says, "Yes." She leans closer to the painting. Lily is sitting exactly where I've sat. Isn't that amazing? The girl trembles when she hears Jules say Lily. The name lingers in the air. It echoes in the girl's head. Sparks fly up. Lily, Lily, Lily. Could it be her name? Could she be Lily? Yes, she whispers. Yes. Jules has given her something she lost a long time ago. Her name. Lily. She hugs her name close to her heart and says it over and over. She mustn't forget it again. A dam has broken and her memories are pouring over it, filling her head with so many forgotten things. She is Lily. She's 6 years old. She lives in Oak Hill. The doll in the painting is the one Jules dug up in the midden. The doll was new then. A birthday present from Grandmother Pettifer, the old lady who forgot things. How did her favorite doll end up in the midden? Who threw it there? Surely not Lily herself. And what happened to the doll to make her so ugly, so dead? Lily shivers. There's something she knows but doesn't want to know. It hides in the shadows with her, dark and dangerous. She keeps her back to it. She will not face it. But it reaches for her, it whispers. She plugs her ears with her fingers and keeps her mind focused on the girls. She will not listen to the story the darkness whispers. Jules tells her friend that the man and woman in the other paintings are Lily's parents, Laura and Henry Bennett. More memories flood back. Mama's and Papa's faces float before her in the darkness, and Papa looks out from the portrait he painted of himself. At the sight of them, Lily feels a fierce stab of pain. She retreats to the back of the wardrobe and burrows into the rags of her mother's dresses. She's a mouse, tiny and helpless and all alone. She's been abandoned, left behind, unloved, forgotten. Why is she not with Mama and Papa? The voice in the dark speaks into her ear. She cannot block it out. She presses her fist to her mouth and sobs quietly. It's not just sorrow she feels, it's also rage. They locked her in this room and never came back. Her own Mama and Papa. She loves them so much. It hurts to remember them. Jules and Maisie's voices interrupt her thoughts. They've found the drawings on the wall.
They tell a story, Jules says.
Yes, they tell a story.
Oh, yes, they do.
Like everything else Lily's forgotten, the story comes back to her.
21. Lily. The story those pictures tell begins on a sunny morning with the promise of a picnic. Usually Aunt Nellie prepares the food, but when Lily comes downstairs, Aunt Nellie isn't in the kitchen. She hasn't set the table for breakfast. Lily doesn't smell bacon or freshly baked bread or coffee.
"Where's Aunt Nellie?"
she asks Mama.
"Why isn't breakfast ready?"
Papa is standing at the window, his back to her. Mama is beside him. Lily's question startles them. They turn and look at her as if they're surprised to see her.
It's Nellie's day off,
Papa says quickly. But today's Saturday, Lily says. Aunt Nellie's day off is Sunday.
Aunt Nellie had something important to do,
Papa says.
So she has to have today and tomorrow off.
Mama frowns at Papa as if she wants to say something, but she reaches for Lily's hand instead. Lily senses something between her parents, a worry they aren't sharing. What did Aunt Nellie need to do? Lily doesn't like not knowing things. Surely, if she asks enough questions, Papa will tell her where Aunt Nellie is. He must know. The cook is almost part of the family, not really an aunt, but like an aunt. Papa's secretive air is worrisome. His face reddens.
For heaven's sake, stop asking so many questions. I don't know why she wanted 2 days off or what she planned to do. And stop calling her your aunt. She's no relation to you.
Lily draws back, shocked at his tone of voice. Papa is never cross with her. Why must she stop calling Aunt Nellie her aunt? She should be quiet, but she hasn't asked the most important question. She turns to Mama this time. How will we have a picnic if Aunt Nellie isn't here to fix the food? Mama straightens the ribbon in Lily's long hair. Don't worry. We don't need Nellie. You and I will roll up our sleeves and put on aprons and do the cooking ourselves. Won't that be fun? Lily is puzzled. Cooking is Aunt Nellie's job. I've never seen you cook anything. Out of the corner of her eye, she sees Papa frown, probably because she forgot and said Aunt Nellie. Mama touches his sleeve as if to say, be quiet, let her call the woman aunt if she wants to. Papa shrugs, but he doesn't smile. He turns to look out the window as if he expects to see someone approaching the house. Mama ties a huge apron around Lily's waist. Aunt Nellie is a big woman, both taller and heftier than Papa. The apron Mama chooses for herself is also too big. While she and Mama begin to assemble ingredients, Papa fetches his drawing pad and sketches them at work. Neither Mama nor Lily has had much experience in the kitchen. They spill flour and sugar, a pot of melted chocolate tips over on the table, and Lily scoops it up with a spoon, which she licks clean. Mama drops 3 eggs. The yolks break and run into the whites. One of the eggs has blood in it, and Lily turns away. The blood means that the beginning of a baby chick was in that egg. Papa cleans up the eggs and throws the mess out the back door. When they finish the cooking and baking, Mama packs a picnic basket with roast chicken, potato salad, green beans, lemonade, and a big, beautiful, lopsided chocolate cake. Before they leave the house, Papa shows them the sketches he's drawn.
I'm calling these drawings amateurs in the kitchen, he says.
Mama laughs. How about cook's day off? Lily says, I hope Aunt Nellie comes back soon or we'll starve to death. She notices Mama and Papa exchange another look that she can't interpret. What do they know and why don't they tell her? Mama holds out a hand for Lily to take. Come along. She clasps Mama's hand and decides to put Aunt Nellie out of her mind, for the moment, at least. They take a path through the woods and across a field to a shady spot by a stream. Mama carries the picnic basket, and Papa carries a patchwork quilt. Lily runs ahead. Grown-ups are so slow. Bees buzz in clover, growing tall on the edges of the field. Lily sees a monarch butterfly flying ahead of her, as if it's leading her somewhere. Under the shade of a willow tree, Mama spreads the quilt on the grass, and Lily helps her unpack the basket. She'd eaten only one of yesterday's biscuits and an apple for breakfast because she's saving her appetite for the picnic, especially the chocolate cake. She smells roasted chicken, and her empty stomach rumbles so loudly that Papa looks around and says, "Is that a bear growling?" Lily giggles. She eats both chicken wings and a drumstick, a big serving of potato salad, a smaller serving of slightly burned green beans, and an enormous piece of chocolate cake. Her stomach full to bursting, she lies on her back and peers up at the canopy of leaves, shushing and fluttering overhead. It's as if the leaves are sharing secrets with each other. She can't remember a better day than this one. After a while, Mama begins to read aloud from Little Women. Lily is drowsy from the food and the summer heat. She begins to fall asleep, but she has the oddest feeling that someone is watching her. She opens her eyes and turns her head to the side. For a moment, she sees a dark-haired girl looking at her. The girl says something Lily cannot understand. Lily tries to speak, but her voice is too small for anyone, even herself, to hear. She blinks, and when she opens her eyes, the girl is gone. Too tired to tell anyone about the girl, Lily closes her eyes. Soon she is fast asleep. When Lily wakes, Mama allows her to take off her shoes and wade in the stream. She steps into the water and shivers at its icy touch. The sand on the bottom is smooth and feels soft under her feet. She splashes and laughs when she realizes that the skirt of her dress is soaked. The willow casts its shade on a still part of the stream. Small insects with long, skinny legs walk across the water surface. They move like skaters, darting quickly from here to there, leaving faint circles behind them. "Papa," she calls. "What are these odd bugs called?" He squats down and peers at them.
"They're part of the Gerardia family," he tells her. "But most people call them water walkers, water striders, pond skaters, and so on. Fascinating, aren't they?"
Lily trails her hand through the water, taking care not to disturb the jerry bugs. "I wish I could walk across the stream on tiny feet like theirs," she says. "It would be fun, wouldn't it, Papa?" She watches a bird soar overhead. "Flying would be fun, too."
"Oh, Lily," Papa smiles. "Such a fanciful child you are."
Mama joins Papa and looks down at her. "Your toes are turning blue with cold," she says. "You'd better come out and put on your shoes and stockings before you catch a chill." Lily sits on the grass and spreads her wet skirt around her. It's late in the afternoon, and the sun hovers like a golden ball above the treetops. The happiness she felt earlier bubbles up inside, and she smiles at a rabbit hopping across the field. Papa coughs and the rabbit freezes, as if he thinks no one will see him if he doesn't move. The sun shines through his ears and dyes them pink. His nose twitches. Papa coughs again, and the rabbit bounds away. A patch of weeds quivers to mark his hiding place, but the rabbit is now truly invisible. The rabbit is smart. No one will catch him. He knows how to be still and how to hide. Mama wipes chocolate off Lily's mouth with her handkerchief. "The cake is a sorry mess in comparison with Aunt Nellie's creations," she says. Papa cuts a big slice for himself and divides what's left between Mama and Lily.
"The best cake I ever ate," he tells Mama. 10 times better than any of Nellie's finest concoctions."
Mama smiles and blushes. "Fibber," she answers. Papa gives her a kiss on the cheek.
"I'd never lie to you."
"Would you lie to me?" Lily asks.
"Never."
Papa stretches and gazes across the fields, which are lush with wheat. Cattle moo. Up on the hillside, sheep answer with bleats. A flock of starlings settles in a tree for the night, disturbing the quiet with their harsh cries. "Then tell me where Aunt Nellie's gone and when she'll be back." Lily is taking a chance. Papa might not answer. He might be cross. But Lily has to know. Papa looks at Mama, who says, "You might as well tell her, Henry."
"Lily, you know Mr. Bailey is a hard man to deal with. He doesn't do the work I pay him for. He lies. He mistreats his wife and the animals in his care."
Papa looks into Lily's eyes. She knows he's telling the truth.
Yesterday, I caught him stealing money from the cash box, over $500 that I forgot to put in the safe.
Papa frowns.
I fired him, and the hired hand quit. This morning, I discovered that they stole three of our horses last night and rode off. Nellie went with them.
He wipes his sweaty forehead.
I hope we don't see any of them again.
Aunt Nellie didn't want to go, Lily says. He made her, I know he did. She's scared of him, Papa. She does what he tells her. Papa takes her hand in his big hand. His love flows from his hand to hers and warms her. He looks at Lily as if she knows something she isn't supposed to know. He hits her. Lily says this so quietly Papa doesn't hear. He must have noticed that Aunt Nellie's eye was black last week. The week before that, she had bruises all over her arms. Who would have hit her but Mr. Bailey? With a sigh, Mama gets to her feet and begins to gather up the picnic things. Papa shakes out the quilt, and Lily helps him fold it. The sun is sinking into a bed of pink and purple clouds, and the evening air is chilly. It's time to leave the stream and the water striders behind.
We should do this every week, Mama says.
Yes, yes, let's. Lily claps her hands and laughs. She's glad to have something else to talk about.
Why not every day?
Papa asks. Can we start tomorrow? Papa lifts her above his head, and her hair tumbles down over his face. Oh, Papa, she says. I love you so. Turning to Mama, she adds, I love you too, Mama, forever and ever and ever. By the time they come in sight of the tall stone house on the hill, it's almost dark. The moon lights their way across the fields and along the path. The evening damp breathes out the scent of grass and wildflowers. In the woods, tree frogs call, and in the distance, an owl hoots. Papa carries Lily upstairs to bed. Mama helps her change into her nightgown. She and Papa kiss her goodnight and tuck her in. Lily wants to hear another chapter of Little Women, but she's too tired to keep her eyes open. 22. Lily. But that's not the end of the story. It's just the end of the happy part. The noise of galloping horses wakes her from dreams of picnics and chocolate cake. She opens her eyes and sees Mama standing by the bed, her face barely visible in the dark. Startled, Lily sits up, wide awake. She grasps her mother's hand and senses her fear. Why is someone coming to call so late at night? Who is it? What do they want? She's frightened. Mama pulls Lily out of bed. Quick, she whispers. Run upstairs to Papa's studio. Don't make a sound. Lock the door behind you. Hide in the wardrobe and don't come out until Papa and I come for you. As Mama speaks, someone pounds on the kitchen door. A man shouts,
Let us in, Bennett. We've got business to settle.
Papa says something, and Lily hears the door burst open and bang against the wall. A man in heavy boots barges into the house, cursing and yelling. Another follows him.
Get out of my house, Bailey. You're out of your mind with drink, Papa says. Go home, sleep it off, or I'll report you to the sheriff.
Lily clings to Mama. What does Mr. Bailey want? Don't worry, your papa will take care of it. I'm afraid, Lily whispers. Please let me stay with you.
Mama rushes her toward the stairs to the third floor.
Do as I say, Lily. I'll explain later. Downstairs, something heavy crashes to the floor. Glass breaks. The noise is terrifying. Mama shoves Lily toward the stairs. Go, she whispers. Go now.
Mama sounds angry. Whimpering with fear, Lily does as she's told. Her legs are weak. Her bare feet make no noise.
In silent haste, she slips into Papa's studio and locks the door behind her. The smell of oil paint and turpentine mixes with the odor of Papa's pipe. The familiar aroma makes it seem as though Papa is in the studio, playing hide-and-seek with her. Lily obeys Mama and hides in the wardrobe. She ducks under Mama's old dresses and curls up in the back, where the shadows are darkest. No one will find her here. She's a mouse, a rabbit, a tiny creature that knows how to be still. The noise downstairs grows louder. The men's voices rise. Mama screams and screams again. Lily hears explosions, two, three, maybe more. She recognizes the sound of gunfire. There's more cursing, more thuds and bangs. She whimpers and burrows deeper into the dresses. The fragrant of Mama's scent lingers in the silk, but Lily doesn't feel safe now. Something is terribly wrong. From the yard, Aunt Nellie cries,
"You drunken fools, what have you done?"
"Where's the girl?" Mr. Bailey shouts.
His voice comes from Lily's bedroom on the floor below. He runs up the stairs. Someone is with him. Not Papa. It must be Ellis Dixon. They stop at the locked door and struggle to open it. They throw themselves against it. Where is Papa? Why doesn't he stop them? She wants to call him, but she forces herself to be quiet. One sound and they'll find her.
"Open the door, Lily," Mr. Bailey shouts. "We won't hurt you."
She hears the anger in his voice. He's lying. If she opens the door, he'll hurt her. He'll beat her with his fists the way he beats Aunt Nellie. Her face will be bruised like Aunt Nellie's. Both her eyes will be black. Her head will hurt. He might even kill her. Lily presses her hands over her heart in hope that she can keep the men from hearing it beating so fast and loud. Papa will come soon. He must. Aunt Nellie shouts again. Her voice shakes with fear.
"Please, please. You got what you came for. Forget the child. She's done you no harm. Leave her be."
Why is Aunt Nellie here? Why doesn't she fetch the sheriff? Aunt Nellie is afraid of Mr. Bailey. That's why she doesn't get help. No matter how much she loves Lily, she'll do what her husband tells her to do. She always does. One of the men kicks the studio door so hard it flies open. They're in the room now. She smells tobacco and whiskey and perspiration. She smells anger and hate, too. In the yard, Aunt Nellie cries,
"What are you doing up there?"
"She ain't here, Charlie," Ellis Dixon says. "She's probably hiding in the woods or something. Come on, let's go while we can. We got the money."
Ellis Dixon runs down the steps, but Mr. Bailey closes the studio door and locks it from the outside.
"By the time you get it open," he shouts, "we'll be gone."
Downstairs, the men drag things out of the house, large bundles, maybe. She hears thumps.
"Oh, no, no, no,"
Aunt Nellie cries.
"You promised not to
shut your mouth."
There's a loud smacking sound, and Aunt Nellie cries out in pain.
"You say one word about what's happened here, and I'll kill you,"
he yells at Aunt Nellie.
"You know I will."
"Charlie,"
Ellis Dixon shouts,
"give me a hand. I need some help."
Long after the horses gallop away, Lily stays in the wardrobe and waits. Where are Mama and Papa? Why don't they come? Perhaps the men tied them up. Surely they'll get loose soon and rescue her. But the house is quiet. No boards creak. No one climbs the stairs. No one speaks. No one calls her name. It's as if no one is here, no one at all, except Lily. At last, the morning sun slants through the window and pokes fingers of light under the wardrobe door. Lily stays where she is. Her body is stiff and cramped from huddling in the same position for so long, but she obeys Mama and waits. She's hungry and thirsty. She cries. Have Mama and Papa forgotten her? They do not come that day. But someone else does. More men tramp through the house. They call her name, but she doesn't recognize their voices. She's afraid they've come to harm her. She doesn't answer the men, and she doesn't open the door. She promised to wait for Mama and Papa. A promise cannot be broken, no matter what. After they leave, she selects a stick of Papa's charcoal and begins to draw on the wall. Her hand moves rapidly. She tells the story in pictures. It's not her best drawing, but she's in a hurry. She must not forget what happened. When she comes to the end of the story, she feels as hollowed out as a dead tree. She's also very tired. So tired. She makes her way to the wardrobe on legs that barely hold her up. She crawls inside and burrows into her mother's dresses. She breathes in her mother's perfume. She falls into a deep sleep. 23. Jules. When we'd looked at the last picture, Maisie turned to me and said, "The drawings tell what happened the night Lily's mother and father were killed. If she hadn't hidden in this room, Lily would have been killed too." I reached for Maisie's hand, and she gripped mine tightly. The shadows darkened and closed in on us. For a moment, I felt as if we were trapped just as Lily had been. I shared her fear and loneliness. I understood what it was like to wait for someone who never came, to be locked in a room while outside. The world went on, years passing, season after season coming and going, to hear the horses galloping out of the night, ridden by killers who were searching for you. Behind us, something creaked, and the spell broke. We turned to look at the wardrobe. Still holding hands, we crept closer. "Lily?" I called. "Don't be afraid." No one answered. "Do you remember the day we saw each other? We were in the field, near the stream, where the willow tree is. You looked right at me and asked me to help you." "You saw me?" Maisie and I stared at each other in disbelief. Lily had answered us. She was here in the same room as we were, hidden in the wardrobe, close enough for us to hear her whispery voice. "What did I look like?" She sounded frightened. It was an odd question, but I answered as best as I could. "Like the pictures your father painted of you. A pretty little girl with long yellow hair wearing a blue dress. You were as solid and real as I am." Lily sighed with what sounded like relief. "I was scared I'd be ugly." "Ugly? How could you be ugly?" "Never mind," Lily said. "I saw you too, but I thought I was dreaming." "You asked me to help you," I said. "Do you remember?" "It was wrong of me to ask," Lily said. "I have fearful enemies, wicked men, fiends from the devil himself, in search of me. They'll harm anyone who gets in their way." "But it's not just those men you need to fear," I told her. "Soon the workmen will start working on the third floor. They'll rip out everything. You won't have a door or a wardrobe to hide in. We have to find another safe place for you." "You don't understand," Lily said. "I promised Mama I'd stay here until she and Papa came for me. I cannot disobey them." "Lily, do you know why your mother and father haven't come?" I asked. Lily was silent for so long, I thought she'd never answer. But at last she said, "Yes, I know why. But a promise is a promise, isn't it? It would be wrong to disobey. Your parents didn't want you to stay in this room forever, Lily." I laid the key on the floor near the wardrobe. "The door is unlocked. Come with Maisie and me. You can't stay here. We'll find a new hiding place."
"Please don't lock your door, Lily," Maisie begged. "Meet us tomorrow in the field by the willow tree. You know the place."
"We'll keep you safe," I promised. Lily was quiet again. "It would be nice to sit under the willow again and watch the minnows and the jerry bugs in the stream."
"Then come and meet us, Lily," I said. "We'll find a way to help you."
She paused to think about what we told her. At last, she said, "I'll meet you tomorrow, I promise." Her voice shook, but she sounded as if she meant it. We pressed our hands against the wardrobe door and whispered goodbye.
"We'll see you tomorrow, Lily. Don't worry. You'll be safe with us."
We ran down the stairs and through the house. In my haste, I tripped over an extension cord and landed on my hands and knees. Maisie helped me to my feet. With a bleeding knee, I hobbled into the addition and the safety of our kitchen. Once I bandaged my cut and we were safe in bed, Maisie asked,
"Where are we going to hide Lily?"
I took a deep breath.
"I have an idea."
I looked at her, worried about her reaction.
"If you promise not to laugh, I'll tell you."
Maisie stared at me.
won't laugh, I promise.
I smoothed the Band-Aid on my knee.
You might think I'm crazy, I don't know, but remember when you told me that some people believe alternate worlds might really exist?
Maisie frowned.
Yes, but, well, what if Lily could go to a different world?
A world where her parents don't die and neither does she.
Maisie thought about it. But the world where she doesn't die, she said slowly, can't exist until she changes what happened that night.
Suppose she didn't hide, I said. Suppose she came downstairs and saved her parents.
Like she got a gun and shot Mr. Bailey and Ellis Dixon?
Maisie said.
I can't see Lily doing that. How about she spills a big bag of marbles on the floor, and the men slip on them and fall, and her father gets their guns and calls the police?
What if Lily doesn't have any marbles? Maisie frowned and ran a hand through her hair.
Okay, Jules, what do you think she should do?
In the picture story, Lily drew a woman outside with the horses. She's the one who cries out on the nights I hear the horsemen. Maybe she'd help Lily.
Yes, Maisie said. Lily can run out of the house and cry for help, and the woman can fetch the sheriff or stop the men or something. Do you think it will work?
I hope so, I said. I can't think of anything else, can you?
No,
Maisie whispered. Exhausted, we tried to sleep. Above us, Lily's window was dark, but I sensed her pacing around her room, frightened, confused, worried. She must not know what to do. Stay and obey, or leave and disobey. For the first time, I realized what I'd asked Lily to do. She hadn't been out of that room for more than 100 years. It was all she knew, her safe place. Leaving it must terrify her. No mother, no father to comfort her. No familiar places for her to take shelter from Mr. Bailey and Ellis Dixon. Maybe it was wrong to ask her to gamble her life on a crazy idea that might not work. But what else was she to do? In the other bed, Maisie was snoring softly. But I was still awake when the morning light crept in through the skylight and chased the shadows from their corners. 24. Lily. After Jules and Maisie leave, Lily opens the wardrobe door and peers out. Sure enough, the key is on the floor, and the door to her room is open. With some difficulty, she picks up the key. Her fingers don't work as well as they used to. Indeed, she has become rather clumsy. She studies the key. As Maisie said, she can lock herself in the room again. Or maybe if she's brave, if she dares, if she trusts Jules, she can leave. She tiptoes to the open door. With the key in one hand and her other hand on the doorknob, Lily considers. She's been in this room for a long time, hours and days and weeks and years, too many to reckon up. She's waited for Mama and Papa. She's done what she was told to do. She knows why they never came back. They're dead. They've been dead since the night she locked herself in this room. If she stays here, she'll never see them again. How does she know this? Because they're dead, and now she knows what that means. And she's still alive. Well, not exactly alive, but not exactly dead either. It's as if she's been forgotten, left behind, with no way to go forward or backward. She's trapped in a world that exists for no one but her and the killers who come for her. What will happen if she leaves the room? She takes a step over the threshold and then takes a step backwards into the room. She wishes she knew what Papa and Mama want her to do, but they've been gone too long for her to ask. They have no more substance than a shaft of sunlight. Lily looks out the door again. The hall is empty. It leads to the steps. What will she see as she goes downstairs? Her legs tremble, and she holds fast to the doorframe to keep from falling. She's afraid of what she'll find in the house. While she hesitates, the sun comes up and paints in the colors that night took away. The workmen arrive. Their laughter booms in the empty rooms. Their voices bounce from wall to wall,
their heavy boots tramp back and forth on the floor beneath her. Doors open and slam shut. She creeps to the top of the stairs and pauses there. She holds her breath. Her toes grip the edge of the first step. She's poised like a diver, ready to plunge into deep water. She lowers one foot, then the other, slow baby steps. She's afraid the stairs will creak, but the wood is silent under her bare feet. On the second floor, she stops and stares about in bewilderment. The furniture is gone. The rugs and the drapes are gone. The pictures are gone. The floor is splintered and uneven. There are streaks and stains and blotches of mold on the plaster walls. The roof must have leaked. A few tattered strips of wallpaper remain. Pink and blue flowers faded now to gray. Lily remembers helping Mama choose that pattern. She tightens her grip on the banister to keep herself from running back to the safety of the studio, where nothing has changed. She looks down at the first floor. It's empty, ruined. The noisy men have torn it apart. Dust covers everything. The walls are open wood frameworks. She can see through them into every room. The workmen are in the parlor. They lounge about, standing in corners, leaning against walls, eating buns and drinking coffee from paper cups. They wear their strange yellow hats and working clothes and heavy boots. One spits on the floor. She stays in the shadows as she descends, stopping on every step to be certain nobody notices her. No one does. Lily tiptoes past the parlor. She should be in plain sight, but the men continue talking and laughing as if she isn't there. One man looks right at her, and she can tell he doesn't see her. It's most peculiar. Moving into a patch of bright sunlight, she stretches out her hand and looks for its shadow. It's not there. She lifts her foot. It casts no shadow either. She remembers trying to see herself in the mirror on the wardrobe door, how blurred and indistinct she was, more of a mist than a reflection. She'd wondered then if people could see her. Now she's sure they can't. Jules and Maisie won't see her, even with their eyes wide open. Invisibility gives Lily courage. If she can't be seen, she can't be hurt. She walks right past a man and glides into the kitchen. It's stripped bare, like the rest of the house. Aunt Nellie's stove is gone, her sink too. The shelves have disappeared, along with all the pots and pans. She notices a new door. It must lead to the addition. She turns the knob, but it's locked. Through it, she hears voices. She smells bacon and remembers its smoky taste. Something in the empty place inside her aches. She looks out a window and sees a path that leads to the meadow where Papa kept his dairy cows. Summoning courage she didn't know she had, Lily slips outside through the open kitchen door. If no one can see her, she can go anywhere. The sun hurts her eyes and she stumbles, half blind. She doesn't remember how painfully bright sunlight is. She stands still and opens her eyes slowly. At first, she can't see anything but blobs of dark and light. Gradually, her eyes stop hurting and her vision clears. Her surroundings are familiar yet unfamiliar. Most of the trees are gone. What was once a green lawn is now a churned-up field of red mud. Nettles, milkweed, and Queen Anne's lace flourish where Mama's roses grew. She walks farther from the house. Nothing is left of the barn except its stone foundation. Weeds and brambles grow in the pasture. Honeysuckle smothers sagging fences and broken stone walls. No hens peck in the dirt. No rooster struts and crows. No cows rest in the grass. No sheep graze in the upper meadow. No corn rustles in the breeze. No wheat rippling like waves. No one works in the fields. A blight has fallen on the farm. Once more, Lily is tempted to run back to Papa's studio and hide in the wardrobe, but in spite of the farm's desolation, the sky is blue and the sun is warm. It's good to be away from dust and dead insects and musty air. It's good to hear birds instead of hammers and saws and men shouting. At last, Lily comes to the field.